everyone. We are back once again to discuss the most important nerd news of the week. On this episode, we get a trailer for the long-awaited sequel to The Joker. Entertainment Weekly gives us an exclusive look at Captain America: Brave New World. The showrunner for Netflix's Avatar: The Last Airbender series steps down. And in the weekly fixation, we're going to be talking about werewolves, whiskey, and the war to save humanity. I'm Brennan Sem, and this is the New Wave Nerds. Hey guys, if you haven't already, please head on over to youtube.com/newwavenerds, subscribe to the channel, and turn on notifications there. Pretty soon here, we're going to be transitioning to a new format where we release our news segments individually Monday through Friday and do a weekly live stream every Saturday. So again, please head on over to the New Wave Nerds YouTube channel, subscribe there, and keep your eyes glued to our socials for the announcement of our very first live stream. Now, let's get back to the show. All right, and our first news story of the day, we finally get the trailer for Joker Folie à Deux, the long-anticipated sequel to the 2019 film of the same name. The trailer is available everywhere. If you have not yet seen it, I cannot recommend going to go watch it enough. It looks absolutely phenomenal. Needless to say, I'm pretty excited for it. Let's get into the article. We've got this from Variety by Rebecca Rubin. The Clown Prince of Crime and Harley Quinn want you to know that what the world needs now is love. That's the message of the first trailer for Joker, Folie à Deux, which sees Joaquin Phoenix reprise his Oscar-winning role as Arthur Fleck and conspire with Lady Gaga as the equally twisted Harley Quinn. Hang on a minute. Harley Quinn is not as equally twisted. Come on. Come on. Like, don't get me wrong. It's not like she's a good person, but to say that she is equally as twisted as Joker? Redonkulous. Anyways, the dark and gritty footage begins at the famed Arkham Asylum, where Joker is locked up at the end of the first film, as Arthur Fleck has a deranged meet-cute with another inmate. You guessed it, Gaga's Harley Quinn. Meet-cute. I believe that's... Is that a term from rom-coms to describe, like, the cute way in which they meet? I think there's a podcast that Dad used to listen to in the day that used that phrase. After the chance encounter in the halls of prison, they fall madly, deeply in love and plan to break out of their straitjackets to take on the world beyond their padded cells. It brings them to the streets of Gotham City, where they manically dance and twirl around the city. I'm nobody. I haven't done anything with my life like you have. Harley Quinn, dressed down in sweats, tells Joker as she makes a finger gun gesture and mimes shooting herself in the head. Oh, jeez. We're just going to put that right in the article? Man, a little warning first. But yes. Yes, it's a mimic, a mirror of... There's a similar scene in the first... Yes, that's right. When he's getting out of the elevator, when he's getting out of the elevator with his neighbor, who is fine, by the way. The first film served as a moody origin story for the Joker, who is portrayed in this cinematic universe, a reclusive, struggling stand-up comedian and part-time clown. In the sequel, he takes his act on the road and performs on all kinds of stages with Harley Quinn as his demented muse. And she's wearing his signature makeup, smeared lipstick and all. This time around, though, Arthur Fleck doesn't seem so lonely. I can't do a Joaquin Phoenix impression, man. I'll tell you what's changed, Joker says in the trailer. I'm not alone anymore. And that's what we should be talking about. The trailer ends with Harley Quinn at Arkham Asylum as she draws a happy face with red lipstick on the glass partition between her and Joker. I want to see the real you, she tells him. Man, and I gotta say, the cinematography on that scene, beautiful. Whoever's the DP for this film, I'm gonna have to look that up. Absolutely amazing. I can already tell this movie is going to be, I don't know, hopefully as beautiful as the first one. I'm all in. I'm very excited. let's see. Director Todd Phillips debuted the footage at CinemaCon, the annual convention for movie theater owners. Although the original 2019 Joker was billed as a one-off, Phillips said he and Phoenix always talked about making a sequel. Not important. Talking about, you know, whatever. Here we go. This is what I was looking for. Little is known about the actual plot of the sequel, which is reportedly a jukebox musical. Phillips said that characterization isn't entirely accurate, though it will feature plenty of song and dance numbers. In the trailer, they waltz across rooftops and through Gotham City to notes of "What the World Needs Now is Love." Phillips says, "I like to say it's a movie where music is an essential element. It doesn't veer too far from the first film. Arthur has music in him. He has a grace to him," end quote. Interesting. Okay, so this sounds like, to me, how I would describe, like, Bohemian Rhapsody. Like, this is probably going to have some less... This is weird, because it's probably going to have less music than Bohemian Rhapsody, but there's like, dance numbers in this, which I don't think there is, really, in Bohemian Rhapsody. But I feel like these fall in the same boat, right, where music is plentiful throughout, and it plays, you know, a large part of the story, but it's not the focus of, like, the format of the movie, I guess. I don't know. Before introducing the trailer, Phillips thanked the room of theater owners for playing Joker. Okay, so this is talking about the first one. Doesn't necessarily matter. Thanks for playing it, basically, is what he says. As Phillips alluded, Joker became a massive blockbuster with $1 billion at the global box office. It became the first R-rated film to pass the $1 billion mark and earned 11 Oscar nominations, including Best Picture. And I believe... Yeah, I'm pretty sure Joaquin Phoenix won the Oscar for that. I don't know how many others it won, or if any, I should say. Yeah, 2 Oscars, it looks like. Winner Best Performance by an Actor in a Leading Role for Joaquin Phoenix. And what else did it win? Oh, here we go. Best Achievement in Music Written for Motion Pictures. Hildur? Oh, man. What the heck? What kind of... What letter is this? What language is... So, Icelandic? I don't know what type of letters they use. I don't even know how to sound this out. Gunnadutter? That's so... I'm terribly sorry to all the Icelandic people I have undoubtedly offended. Man, wait a minute. Tim Dillon is going to be in Joker 2? Sorry, as I was scrolling up and his beautiful face caught my eye. Man, where was I going with this? Oh, yes. So 2 Oscar wins. 11 nominations, 2 wins. Not bad. Again, I guess I could have looked what else it was up against that year, but I didn't think that far ahead, and I've already closed the tab, and I'm not that particularly interested in it, if I'm gonna be honest with you. So let's get back to the article here. Joker 2 will debut on the big screen on October 4th, 2024, exactly 5 years after the first film. Oh, that's fun. What a fun fact. The original cost, $62.5 million to produce, an unusually conservative budget for a comic book adaptation. Given its runaway financial success, the follow-up was granted a much more substantial $200 million price tag. Jumping shiplets. Yeah, that is quite the increase. And granted, I'm sure a lot of that is going to, salaries. They're going to have to pay Joaquin Phoenix and Lady Gaga more. And I'm sure, considering the first one was a one-off, I'm sure... Todd Phillips, that's his name. I'm sure he asked for more, you know. I don't know. Let's see. Who is this, the same writer? Scott Silver. Yep, he's the same one from the first film as well. So likely they all asked for raises, which is acceptable. But honestly, man, I don't know. Does a film like this need a big budget? You know, like, I mean, Joker 1 was obviously so incredible off of almost a quarter of the budget. Like, does this really need that much more? I don't know. I mean, obviously, I've never made any film, let alone, a big blockbuster. But I would imagine, like, I don't know. I mean, what all are they doing? What costs so much? I don't understand. I don't get how the first one, like... What is different from the first one that that it literally costs four times as much. I don't know. Ah, man. I guess, I don't know. Let's get back to the article. Oh, here we go. The sequel will screen in the IMAX 70mm format, although it was shot with IMAX-certified lenses that modify digital cameras and not its film cameras. The company has created at least 10 film prints of Joker Folie à Deux to play in select worldwide locations. Footage of Joker debuted as part of Warner Brothers' presentation to exhibitors. The studio also has Beetlejuice 2, Horizon, American Saga, and Mad Max prequel Furiosa on a 2024 slate. Okay, there's a fire alarm going off somewhere. Anyways, if you can't tell, I am very excited for this movie. I think it's going to be phenomenal. I'm so excited for it that I'm not even, like, I almost didn't bring it up, but I'm just going to anyway, just because it's a nerd podcast. I don't really care about the fact that they're seemingly changing Harley Quinn's origin story, right? In the comics, well, I guess in the animated series where she was introduced, but then further in the comics when she was brought over, Harleen Quinzel is the doctor, the psychiatrist, I think psychiatrist, yeah, who works with the Joker. And eventually, you know, they build this relationship, and the Joker, I don't know how much he manipulates her versus how much she just sort of happens to be upset. Like, she has the personality and you know, genetic markers or whatever that make her prone to obsession or whatever. I don't know if they ever, like, explicitly say. I'm sure there's different origin stories. Man, I should probably rewatch the animated series now and read some Harley Quinn comics. I really didn't necessarily want to do that, to be honest with you. I'm not particularly interested in the character. She's just kind of annoying to me. I mean, she's fine. Like, if she shows up in a story, I'm not going to be mad. I like the way she was used in the Arkham games, sort of sparingly, but in a fun way. Like, you still get to... She's still sort of there. But she's there as a proxy to the Joker, you know? I don't know. But I feel like, I don't know. I was trying to decide, is it more interesting? I was trying to decide which I thought was more interesting. If the Joker, like, manipulates her into falling in love with him, or if she just has an obsessive personality, and she's, you know, she has these holes in her life, and so she seeks to fill them, and she finds the Joker, right? So it's most like putting the impetus on her that she forms a relationship. I think that's more interesting to me from the perspective of Harley Quinn, because then she's not a victim, right? She's like a willing participant. I feel like that adds a little bit more depth to the story of her being like this person who is purportedly, you know, a good person, but who secretly deep down was open to this sort of action and level of crime and I don't know, depravity, I guess. I think that's much more interesting. If we're looking at it through the lens of a Joker story, I think Joker manipulating her into falling in love with him is much more compelling. But I think it depends on your like what the point of the story is. But like I said, I don't, as far as we can tell, neither of those points matter in relation to this movie, right? Because presumably she is an inmate at Arkham, and not the doctor. I did see, oh man, I wish I saved the video, but there was one gentleman who went on, I saw, I guess it was, I didn't even see the YouTube video, I just saw a clip from a reel, so maybe I should have tried to find that first, but I forgot about it until just now. But this guy thinks that, in fact, Harley, they didn't change the origin story, but that she is a psychiatrist at Arkham, but she like embeds herself in the hospital to get closer to Arthur in the hopes that he, you know, I don't know, opens up or whatever. And then she goes through and falls in love with him or whatever. I don't remember if he had any specific evidence. I feel like he had some good points, but I don't think he was anything that, that like really actually sort of hinted at that. I think that could be an interesting story. I don't like that, I guess. I don't know. I just don't think logically that makes sense. Like, why would she embed herself? Why would she go Sean interrupted on this? You know, like, it, I don't know. It just doesn't make much sense. Okay, so again, this is, you know, we're looking at a different universe here, right? Where the Joker isn't, at least at this point, a sadistic evil maniac. He is just like, you know, psychotic or whatever. You know, he's not super sadistic. And so I don't know. Are they really just going to make it so it's like Harley has, I'm so curious to see this relationship between the two of them. Oh, I'm so excited, man. This movie's going to be so good. This feels good because this is the most excited I've been for a superhero related film in a long time, I think. I don't know. I'm just so curious to see the relationship between them. Because obviously, you know, they can't make it like the exact same story because it's different. But I feel like Harley's trajectory is going to be similar to Arthur Fleck's in the first film, which, I don't know. Maybe that is less compelling. Maybe that is less compelling. It might be more compelling to see or to have, you know, this universe's Arthur Fleck talk to a psychiatrist and, I don't know. I'm curious to see where they take this. I'm really interested in her Lady Gaga, in Lady Gaga's Harley Quinn. I think she's going to do amazing. I don't particularly like her. I know a lot of people love her. I don't have anything. I'm fairly neutral. Let's see. I know she was in A Star Is Born, and I watched that, and I guess I only half watched it, so maybe I shouldn't say that. But I wasn't particularly compelled. I thought, you know, she, like I said, she did great, and she could perform the hell out of that song, whatever it is. Man, what's that song called? The main song from that movie. I don't know. Man, that's really gonna bother me because it used to play on the radio all the time. Anyways. I think I should probably watch House of Gucci just so I can see her in another thing. But I really don't want to watch this movie. Like, this does not interest me at all. I mean, it's got a seemingly good cast. Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't particularly like Adam Driver, but it's got Al Pacino. It's got Al Pacino. Jeremy Irons. And Jared Leto. Not really a lot. Oh, it's directed by Ridley Scott. You know, I was looking through his filmography, and he's got, you know, it's such a weird, like, kind of bipolar filmography. Like, he's got films like The Martian, Blade Runner, and Gladiator, which are like, you know, eights, mid eights, and then he's got like Napoleon, which evidently was just terrible. And he's got like, you know, he could do Alien, which is, I mean, you know, another one of the most iconic films in the culture. And I don't know, it's just so weird. He's got so many projects too. 59 total projects. I mean, that's kind of crazy. I should probably watch Napoleon. I really just had high hopes for it, and I if I don't watch it, then I can still pretend that it was pretty good. I definitely don't want to watch it, I think, before I watch Folie à Deux, because I don't want it to color my outlook on Joaquin Phoenix. No, yeah, I'll watch it. Whatever. I'll watch it. Whatever. Okay, so let's see. When does this movie come out? Joker. October 4th of this year. So we got about 6 months yet. Oh yeah, I could easily watch Napoleon before that. And House of Gucci. Let's see, who else is returning in this cast? Zazie Beetz, who was she's the neighbor in the first one. The one who is the recipient of the previous miming of shooting in the head. Do they? What happens with those two? I gotta watch this movie again, the original one. I still can't believe Tim Dillon is gonna be in this. I mean, I love Tim Dillon. He's so funny, dude. Oh man, I don't listen to his podcast, but it's definitely one that I think would I would get a good laugh out of. There's really not much in there. Oh, you know what? Now that I'm thinking, it makes sense that Tim Dillon is in this, because if I remember correctly, in the first one, let me see if I can pull it up. In the first one, I think Sam, what, how do you say his name? Sam Morril. I think he has a little bit part where he plays a stand-up comic right before Joker goes on stage and bombs. Let me see if I can find this. Yeah, Sam Morril. Here we go. Open mic comic. Yes, that's right. I forgot about that. That was a weird when I noticed that. Yeah, that was weird. Man. So yeah, Joker Folie à Deux coming out October 4th. Man, that's gonna come on us. Pause. That's gonna come up to us. That's gonna appear real quick. Man, I can't wait. I really can't. I hope that it doesn't get any bad press so that I can continue to feel excited about it. But yeah, this is one that we will 1,000% be reviewing once it comes out. Definitely, definitely. So stay tuned for our thoughts on that. Let's get into the next story here. Next, from Entertainment Weekly, Anthony Mackie enters Brave New World in first look at next Captain America. Entertainment Weekly can exclusively reveal the first official photos of Captain America: Brave New World set to hit theaters on 14th of February, 2025. Mackie headlined the Disney Plus series The Falcon and the Winter Soldier as Sam Wilson, aka Falcon, opposite Sebastian Stan's Bucky Barnes. The events of that series began Sam's journey towards picking up Steve Rogers' vibranium shield and assuming the mantle of the next Captain America. Now, Sam is back to lead his own movie, directed by Julius Ohna. Not only that, he's here to assemble a new team of Avengers. Marvel Studios President Kevin Feige hit the stage at the Coliseum in Caesar's Palace during CinemaCon on Thursday, where he welcomed Mackie himself and screened the first footage from the movie for the room. That is such a long sentence, dear Lord. In it, Harrison Ford makes his Marvel debut as Thaddeus Thunderbolt Ross, a role originated by the late William Hurt, RIP, starting in 2008's The Incredible Hulk and continuing all the way through to 2019's Avengers Endgame, where the character served as Secretary of State. Ross is now the newly elected President of the United States, though he's not butting heads so much with the new Cap. Revealed in the CinemaCon sneak peek, Ross welcomes Sam to the White House, thanking him for his past heroic actions. Though he admits he isn't too fond of superheroes, he says even he can recognize Sam's goodwill and tasks the military veteran with reforming Earth's mightiest heroes. But, as they soon realize, there's a leak in Ross's inner circle. A strange sound, an old-timey song. An old-timey song? Sorry, interrupts Ross's presentation at a White House event, triggering sleeper super soldiers in the room to attack the president, including Carl Lumley's Isaiah Bradley, returning from The Falcon and the Winter Soldier. For those of you who haven't seen the show, Isaiah Bradley is a black super soldier that was made, he was created in Vietnam, maybe? I don't know. I think Vietnam. Yeah. Back to the article. Quote, it made more sense for it to be more of a grounded espionage action movie as opposed to aliens and airplanes coming through portals and shit, Mackie tells Entertainment Weekly. Even though I've been in... I mean, it definitely does. I've got to agree with them there. Even though I've been in so many of them and have seen it all now, the opportunity for Sam to really establish himself as a true action star and Avenger comes home with this movie. Cool. I'm not going to lie. And then under this paragraph is the image, one of the images, showing Harrison Ford with what I've got to say I think might be a horrendous haircut. Might be a horrendous haircut. I don't know. I think, I mean, I've got to see it. He's in profile right now, but I really don't like the way it looks. But I must say, opposite him, Anthony Mackie, looking as glorious, as beautiful as ever, he's got a new Captain America suit. And I got to say, I think it looks awesome. Is it, I can't tell if it's most, it's similar to Cap's stealth suit from Winter Soldier, right? It's, they're more muted colors. I still think like the chest plate and stuff is mostly navy, but it appears like his shoulder pads are black and maybe his neck bit is black as well. I don't know. I mean, like I said, it's profile, so you can't see much of it, but man, I think the suit looks dope. I wonder if the star, I wonder if they've done something interesting with the star. Like they've, I don't know, stylized it in a weird way. And I wonder if that's one of the reasons that they show him from profile. Back to the article. Brave New World, Mackie adds, feels 10 times bigger than The Falcon and the Winter Soldier. One of the biggest conversations we had from the beginning was for this not to be Falcon and the Winter Soldier Part 2. For this to be its own movie, with its own story, with its own characters. Though Mackie admits it's still somewhat of a two-hander. That's a weird way of phrasing it. Gotta double fist this movie. Anyways, I mean, that's a fair request, right? To have this not be Falcon and the Winter Soldier Part 2, right? You want to, if the point of it is that you're going to headline your own thing, you want it to be your own thing. Now, I will say, notably, it would be hard to make this Falcon and the Winter Soldier Part 2 because I don't believe Bucky's going to be there at all, which I hate. I'm not going to lie. I don't like that. If they wanted it, if they didn't want it to be Falcon and the Winter Soldier Part 2, then I think, you know, like show him a little bit in the beginning and then have him go off and do his own thing or have Sam do his own thing or whatever you need to be. But I think it feels kind of fake. Like he should be there. I mean, this is, you know, the only Captain America movie that he won't be in, which kind of sucks. But like I said, I understand where Anthony Mackie's coming from. Like he doesn't, he probably wants to step out on his own. And to be fair, Sebastian Stan almost certainly does as well, right? And he's getting his own project where he gets to, he I believe is the leader of the Thunderbolts team, the movie which is coming out a couple months after this one. So presumably in this, at least I would think, okay, I don't know. Obviously, I don't know. But presumably, in this, either at the beginning or before the movie even starts, that's probably going to be the explanation for why Bucky isn't there, because they've started the Thunderbolts before this movie, and then the movie is, you know, whatever. Or they're going to use this movie and use the post-credit scene of this to set up the Thunderbolts, which I think makes more sense. But then at that point, I think you have to find a reason why Bucky isn't in the movie proper, right? And again, I'm not saying he needs to be, I don't know. I guess, yeah, I feel like it feels so mean, like fake to me that he's not there. I don't know. Captain America without Bucky, And like I get, it's not like Steve Rogers, so Bucky doesn't necessarily have, you know, it's not like the character is important, but I felt like at the end of Falcon and Winter Soldier, we really built up like a camaraderie there, right? I don't know. Let's get back to this, figure out let's why Anthony Mackie says it's still a two-hander. Instead of palling around with Stan's Bucky, Sam is in the thick of it with Danny Ramirez as Joaquin Torres, the character's tech-savvy, quote, friend from work, and another iteration of Falcon from the comics. They're evenly yoked, Mackie explains. They're both military guys. I was his commanding officer. We have more of a friendship as opposed to the way I admire Steve or the way I didn't like Bucky. See, that's, I mean, yeah, at the beginning of the series, but at the end, you know, like, they're homies. Like, I mean, Bucky's even, you know, got a little thing going on with Sam's sister, right? So, like, I don't know. I feel that's not a good reason for them not to have Bucky here. Obviously, I understand the meta reason of Bucky getting his own movie, but he's not even getting his own movie, right? It's not like it's a Winter Soldier movie. It's a Thunderbolts movie that has four other main protagonists. And I can almost guarantee that they're going to focus more on Yelena than anybody else there, right? I mean, let's be honest here. The two main characters are going to be Yelena and Bucky. I mean, obviously, they're Red Guardian, Ghost. Am I forgetting somebody? I feel like I'm forgetting somebody, but I don't know who. I spelled it wrong. Thunderbolt. Oh, that's right. U.S. Agent. Did I say Ghost already? Oh, and Taskmaster. That's right. Yeah, I mean, let's be honest here. The people who are going to get the most screen time, I mean, they're going to be Bucky and Yelena, which, I mean, I'm not like I'm opposed to that, but, like, again, it's not like Bucky is getting his own movie. He is getting a team-up movie. So I don't know. It's weird. I don't know. I just feel like maybe I would be slightly less, you know, miffed. Maybe I would feel like Bucky isn't getting sidelined quite so much if we knew a little bit more about, you know, this Joaquin Torres. You know, we see a little bit of him in Falcon and Winter Soldier, but he's really not there all that much. Like, he's just sort of in a couple scenes. I don't know. I hope he at least makes a cameo, I hope they don't just, like, ignore him. I guess that's what I'm mostly worried about, right? Like, if he's not there, but they justify it, like, he's out doing a mission or something. He's leading the team or whatever, getting ready. I don't know. If you find a reason for it, then I'm fine with it. But I'm a little worried that they're just gonna, like, you know, it's just gonna be like a throwaway line, you know, where Sam just says something about Bucky not being there, or I don't know. I just hope they don't ignore the character itself, because those, like, these two are pretty, you know, linked together, right? Like I said, I mean, there's definitely camaraderie there at the end, and they've had a lot of screen time together, not just from this show, but in the other properties as well, I guess. I don't know. I just really like Sebastian Stan, and I really like Bucky. I think, obviously, I've said before, the Winter Soldier is one of my favorites, so it's like, I just wish he was there, I guess. Let's get back to the article. That same background, so the shared military background, is why Ford's Ross holds Sam in higher esteem than Steve. What? What? That line doesn't make any sense because Steve was in war. Like, Steve's a war hero still. I don't know. I mean, I get, like, I understand the difference between, like, Sam and Steve. But I guess this is more just a knock on whoever wrote this article. Who is it? Nick Romano? I feel like you got to add a little bit more because, I don't know, whatever. I mean, the same, whatever. At the same time, Mackie notes, there is that idea of keeping your guard up and watching your back when it comes to each other. Okay, end quote. That's the end of the paragraph too, so we're not going to expand on that at all. There is that idea of keeping your guard up and watching your back when it comes to each other. So the point of this quote is that, I guess, Sam isn't as trusting as Steve. I don't understand. That same background is why Ford's Ross. Yeah, no, I mean, there needs to be some, like, Mackie explains they're both military guys. So was Steve. I was his commanding officer. We have more of a friendship as opposed to the way I admire Steve or the way I didn't like Bucky. That same background is why Ford's Ross holds Sam in higher esteem than Steve. At the same time, Mackie notes, there is that idea of keeping your guard up and watching your back when it comes to each other. Yeah, I feel like they just need to add a little bit more to this paragraph. That was just really weird. Ross isn't the only throwback to the Incredible Hulk. Not counting Shira Haas as Ruth, a member of the U.S. government, Liv Tyler is back playing. Why wouldn't we count that? Is that? Oh, God, I hate the way that this is written. Sorry. Ross isn't the only throwback to the Incredible Hulk. Not counting Shira Haas as Ruth, a member of the U.S. government, Liv Tyler is back playing Ross's daughter Betty, while Tim Blake Nelson reprises Samuel Stern, aka the leader. Wouldn't you say reprises his role as? Who was last seen being taken into S.H.I.E.L.D. custody after Banner's blood caused him to mutate in that 2008 movie. Mackie doesn't believe Marvel fans need to rewatch The Incredible Hulk to prepare for Brave New World. Quote, this movie is a clear reset. It really reestablishes the idea of what this universe is and what this universe is going to be. I think with these movies, you're getting a clear new branding of what Marvel is headed towards, the same way they did with Captain America, the Winter Soldier, end quote. Okay, so I really like that they're continuing to draw parallels between Winter Soldier. We've talked up that movie a ridiculous amount. It's constantly vying for the top spot in my ranking of the Marvel movies. It's up there. It's always top five. It's going back and forth between Civil War and Infinity War as to which is my favorite. It's so good. So I'm glad that they're making those comparisons. I'm glad Anthony Mackie mentions that this movie does better as an espionage thriller, or however he describes it. Where was it? Yes, grounded espionage action movie as opposed to aliens and airplanes coming through portals. I'm glad that they're definitely going this much more grounded route. And the other part of this quote interests me, right? It where he says, it really reestablishes the idea of what this universe is and what this universe is going to be. What does that mean? What do you mean by that? If you meant it in a way that going forward, much more stories are going to be like grounded in stuff like that, I would understand. Yeah. But we know that after this, we're having a million and one, you know, massive cosmic level threats, you know? It really reestablishes the idea of what this universe is and what this universe is going to be. I think with these movies, you're getting a clear new branding of what Marvel is headed towards, the same way they did with Captain America: Winter Soldier. What does that mean? How is it? So I don't know what that means. I hope that means that this movie's actually good. I hope that means that this is good, and that's what the reset is, that it reestablishes the idea of what this universe is and what it's going to be. It reestablishes the fact that we can make good properties. I don't know. You're getting a clear new branding of what Marvel is headed towards. A clear new branding of what Marvel is headed towards. Does he mean, I don't know. Because, like, the first part of this quote makes me think he's mostly talking about, like, in-universe stuff. I don't know. Whatever. We got one paragraph here to finish it out. The title says it all. Brave New World, a seeming reference to the classic Aldous Huxley novel. Quote, the title implies that there's a new, bigger enemy now. There's a new frontier that we have to conquer, end quote. That's not the end of the quote. From Captain America, the First Avenger, to Endgame, the enemy was always good versus bad. Now that we've conquered that, where do we go from here? When the bad guys reappear, in what form are they reappearing? It's a new storyline with new characters, with new beliefs, and it creates a new idea of this new world that we're going into. Man, he really used the word new a lot there. That was definitely in his marketing brief, man, in his PR packet or whatever the technical term of that. When he went on his press tour, they're like, you need to emphasize two things, that this is new, that it's going to change things, and that it is hearkening back to Winter Soldier, which is widely regarded as, if not, I mean, like, I'm probably alone in saying that it's vying for the top movie in the whole franchise, but I mean, everybody loves it, you know? So, man, that's really funny. I'd never picked up on like, what... Yeah, that's hilarious. That's really thrown me for a loop. So, like, when the bad guys reappear, in what form are they reappearing? Now that we've conquered that, where do we go from here? From First Avenger to Endgame, the enemy was always good versus bad. So I feel like, okay, and I've said this before, and as of yet, I have never been able to find the first article that I saw this in. But at one point, I had read something that said the plot for this movie was that they were going to... what are the words I'm looking for? The story was going to revolve around what did they call it? Tiamat Island, the celestial that appeared at the end of Eternals, right? So this big old robot or whatever starts peeking up through, I think it's the Indian Ocean or Southeast Sea or something like that. Yeah, I think it's somewhere in that vague region in the southern hemisphere. That's not an important part. But at one point, I'd read an article that said that this story was going to revolve around the battle for resources with the appearance of this new celestial. And at the time, the article said that Tiamat was... made of adamantium, and that was going to be one of the ways that they start to, you know, hint at the Fox properties being over. I mean, they already mentioned mutants in Ms. Marvel. So I don't know. But like I said, I have no idea. Like, I haven't been able to find that article since then. I wonder if I just dreamed it. I don't know. I mean, if that were the case, then that would make sense. The line, the enemy was always good versus bad. Now that we've conquered that, where do we go from here? When the bad guys appear, in what form are they reappearing? I mean, there's a reading of that where before it was, you know, quote morally clear, whereas now we're dealing in gray areas, right? Because if there are multiple nation states vying for control of this island and the resources therein, everybody theoretically has their own reasons. Everybody has their morality, right? That shows that they are, you know, doing the right thing or whatever. But I don't know. Like I said, I don't know if that's true. I know, obviously, we know that a big part of this film is Harrison Ford asking Sam Wilson to reassemble the Avengers. So I don't know. I'm not gonna lie. After reading this article, after seeing this still of Anthony Mackie in the suit, I'm a little bit more excited. The comparisons to Winter Soldier, the statement that it's, you know, an espionage film, that it's, you know, it's not cosmic in degree, in scale, no aliens and planes coming out of portals. That all really, really interests me. And I really like the suit. I think it looks super cool. I can't wait to actually see it on the screen. Obviously, I'm still worried that they're going to drop the ball and it's not going to be good. You can say, you know, you can make all the comparisons you want to a great film, but if you can't, you know, if you are unable to achieve that, then it doesn't matter, you know, obviously. And you're setting the bar high. But I'm excited for this. I'm starting, I don't know why, but yeah, suddenly I'm much more excited for this movie than I was before. And I'm surprised to be excited for a Marvel property, period, if I'm being honest with you guys. But it feels good. Hopefully, I don't know. Hopefully we get to see some more stuff and we get like a little teaser trailer. Obviously, we're not going to get the full 2.5 minute trailer, you know, for another 8 months at least, probably. But yeah, just a little, like a little 15, 30 second spot, just so I can get a glimpse of what the suit looks like. So I can see Harrison Ford's hair from the front. So I can see what they're doing with, like, with Tim Blake Nelson. I'm really curious. My curiosity is definitely peaked. So, once again, this is supposed to come out February 14th, 2025. It's probably going to get delayed again, so I wouldn't get your hopes set too high there. But with that, we're going to leave it here, and let's get right into the next story. And in our last news story of the day, we have this from Variety. Netflix's Avatar The Last Airbender showrunner Albert Kim to step down. Jabbar Raisani and Christine Boylan to lead final two seasons. Netflix's live-action Avatar The Last Airbender series is undergoing a change in leadership. Variety has learned that Albert Kim, who developed the series and served as showrunner on Season 1, is stepping down. Christine Boylan and Jabbar Raisani will lead the show as executive producers going forward. Netflix has already announced the show has been renewed for two more seasons, concluding with Season 3. Boylan served as co-executive producer on Season 1 of Last Airbender, while Raisani was an executive producer, director, and VFX supervisor. Kim will remain on board as an executive producer for Seasons 2 and 3. According to an individual with knowledge of the situation, Kim wanted to explore new opportunities following the multi-year development process on Last Airbender, and assigned a deal with Disney to work as an executive producer on the Percy Jackson series while also developing new projects for the company. Boylan's other credits include... Actually, okay, so here we go. Let's go back to Kim. Albert Kim, this is a fair enough reason to leave. Like, this show was in such, you know, development hell for so long. It was announced, man, when was it announced? I want to say like a long time ago for sure. At least, I even feel like maybe even 2017 or 2018 is when it originally got announced. So it's like, this has been a very long production. And obviously, you know, the original animated series showrunners were involved at one point, but ended up leaving. And so I think it's very reasonable for this guy to be like, hey, I've devoted, you know, a half a decade to this one show. I got to do something else before I die, which I respect. I do respect that. I don't know. Let's get back to the article here and read about some of these. Read about who will be taking over. Boylan's other credits, so Christine Boylan, her other credits include the hit Peacock series Poker Face, as well as shows like, is it really a hit series? I've never heard of it. Poker Face. Natasha Lyonne, let's see. Adrian Broner's in it. 7.8 out of 10 stars. Simon Helberg, too. I didn't realize he still did stuff after Big Bang Theory, so that's new. Ron Perlman, Joseph Gordon-Levitt. This is quite the cast. Oh, Tim Blake Nelson. Lil Rel Howery. Nick Nolte. Oh, created by Rian Johnson? Let's see, what is this? Charlie has an extraordinary ability to determine when someone is lying. She hits the road with her Plymouth Barracuda, and with every stop encounters a new cast of characters and strange crimes she can't help but investigate and solve. A 10-part mystery series. Yeah, no, that's probably not something that I'm going to watch. I'm not going to lie. Hit series, apparently, though. 7.8 is now a hit. As well as shows like Netflix Marvel series The Punisher, Citadel at Amazon, and Cloak and Dagger at Freeform. Was Cloak and Dagger terrible? I'm pretty sure Citadel didn't go over that well either. Cloak and Dagger. Obviously not the 1984 film. Wow, yeah, 6.6 out of 10 stars. Not incredible. Let's see. What all did she do for this, though? Command F. Boylan. Series writing credits. 2 episodes. And co-executive producer on 9. Yeah, so I mean, like, I don't know necessarily how much control she would have had over the quality of this, but not a particularly fantastic sign. Let's see, what was Citadel? I remember when I saw the trailer for that, I thought it looked really interesting, but I did not hear, or I heard that it was not good. Yeah, 6.2 out of 10, which sucks because I like Richard Madden. Ooh, I hit the wrong button. I like to see him do more stuff. I really liked him in Game of Thrones, obviously. Robb Stark is probably one of my favorite characters in the whole show. Let's see. Christine Boylan, co-executive producer on 4 episodes, and that's it. Looks like she didn't write anything. Okay, so again, not a particularly large role, or presumably not a particularly large influence, I should say. So, I don't know. She's also an accomplished playwright, recently debuting her sci-fi play Analog in London, as well as a comic book writer for DC, Marvel, Boom Studios, and Tokyopop. Really? What has she written? Christine Boylan. Okay. Are you going to give me anything she actually wrote? I'm so confused. Why does it no comics show up? I'm so confused. Comics. Here we go. Comic Vine. Superman, Secret Files and Origins. Ooh. Star Trek, the manga? What? Oh, is that all? Yeah, no, nothing to... Wait. What? This is so weird. Why is it not, like, showing me anything? This is weird. This is a really weird Google search, guys. I think this lady's a ghost. League of Comic Geeks. Here we go. Comics. Oh, the only thing she did for Marvel was entitled Girl Comics, number 2. I can't imagine that this is a you know, a riveting story. $5 for this one issue? Please. That's redonkulous. Huh. Yeah, no. So really nothing at all. So, I mean, yeah, technically a comic book writer, but having written very few comics, I'm slightly less than comfortable describing her as such. Okay. She's wrapped by WME, Art/Work Entertainment, and attorneys. Okay, who cares about that? In addition to his work on Last Airbender, Reisani has done VFX work on shows like Lost in Space and Stranger Things for Netflix, as well as Game of Thrones and The Flash, among many others. Which Flash? He's also directed episodes of Lost in Space in addition to episodes of Last Airbender. He's repped by CAA and Myman Green. Okay, let's see. What is this guy? What's the first guy's? Jabbar Reisani. Okay, let's take a look at this. We'll see what episodes of Airbender he directed and which Flash he did the VFX for. Okay, involves special effects for Iron Man 1. Dope. Yeah, 20 episodes. He's got credits for 20 episodes of Game of Thrones. Impressive. Visual effects plate supervisor. Seasons 3 and 5, if that colors your opinion. These were good seasons, weren't they? Yeah, I mean, all the early ones were good, weren't they? Except for the end. And it's the Flash TV series. Okay, not Flash the movie. But he only did one episode, so, and it's only the pilot? So what a very weird... Man, that's so weird to include that. Oh, he was a CG supervisor for... the 2005 Fantastic Four movie. Let's go. Okay. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, take that as you will. What has he directed? Okay. A couple of shorts of movie that has 4.7 stars, which now I really want to watch. A documentary crew follows an elite unit of soldiers in the wake of an alien invasion. It was made in 2014 and it's set in 2021. Oh my god, this trailer looks so dumb. Whoa. I mean, it was 2014. What else came out in 2000? Oh no. That's just new. So, okay. The movie proper takes place in 2031, I guess. I want to watch this. This looks really bad. What is this on? Nothing I have. Dang it. Man, this movie looks like it's going to be incredible. Okay. What was I doing? Jabbar? Oh, yeah. So, I mean, he really hasn't directed much. A couple episodes of Lost in Space, which I didn't watch. I didn't even know that it existed. Oh, no, I did know. Yeah, this was on my list before I got my own Netflix account, so that's why I forgot that it existed. I haven't seen it in, oh, however long. Okay, which episodes of Airbender? Omashu and Into the Dark. Okay. What happens in these episodes? I remember... Okay, so this is the... well... Yeah. Man. Okay, so Into the Dark, I'm definitely going to hold that one against him. Though I don't know if it's the... that's probably not necessarily his fault. I just hate the way that Boomy is in that. Boomy sucks in this, in the live action show. So anyways, and then, yeah, it looks like the end of the article is just a roundup of the, yeah. Okay. So that's all we need from the article. I don't know. I thought this was interesting information. This, you know, this Netflix show has had, you know, quite the wild ride with writers and it being in development for so long. And I don't know. I mean, like, I think we talked about last episode, you know, changing creative directors isn't necessarily a bad thing. It can often, or not often, it can sometimes lead to good things, but I don't know. I just, honestly, I'm not that worried about it. Even if they make it worse, I'm not going to be, if they come in and it's terrible, I'm not going to be that upset, because it's not like I loved the show. Like, it was good enough, but not anything too crazy. So I don't know. It's just something I thought would be interesting. I'm curious to see if there's a noticeable difference in seasons 2 and 3. Like, if you can tell that the direction is different, or that the showrunner is different. Showrunner, yeah, I guess. If it was one before, if there's one showrunner previously, but now there's two showrunners, would it be, I hope that you could tell that the showrunners are different, or the showrunner is different? I don't know. I mean, showrunners are, I guess, but it feels like it doesn't sound as right. I don't know. I mean, like, it's a good enough show. It's a good enough show. I'll probably give it a rewatch. Not for a while, actually. When did this come out? Did it come out in the new year? Yeah, it had to have, because I lived here. Was it just last month? February 22. Okay. Yeah, I don't know. I hope in seasons 2 and 3 they come back and they, well, mostly I just hope that they add some more development to the characters and give them, like, personalities and stuff and allow them to grow and change. You know, like one typically wants in a story. But I don't know. Hopefully. I do have high hopes. We love the animated show here. The source material is incredible, and so there's plenty of opportunity to make this adaptation, you know, phenomenal, and still make it your own, right? Because, I mean, obviously, it's very tonally different from the animated series. It's a very, you know, it's much more darker. It's a serialized drama, right? So you can still have those and yet pull from the source material and make it in a way that is, you know, satisfying. So I hope. I mean, like you said, the first season wasn't what I was hoping, but it was still decent. It was decent enough that when seasons 2 and 3 come out, I'm still going to put them on. So with that, let's leave it there, and let's head over to the weekly fixation. All right, so I've actually got two recommendations here for you, something to watch and something to read. Why don't we start off with something to read this week? So I've just finished the first volume of a comic series entitled Moonshine. So this comic is written by the creative team behind one of my favorite Batman stories, writer Brian Azzarello, and artist Eduardo Risso. Longtime listeners of the show may recognize those names, or at least Brian Azzarello. I've certainly talked about him more than enough. I really enjoy his work. But this one was something a little different. So I'm just going to read the synopsis here for you on the back of my hard copy of Volume 1. A Prohibition-era thriller, Moonshine, tells the story of Lou Perlow, a city-slick gangster sent from New York to Appalachia to track down a new supplier of illicit booze. But what Lou unwittingly uncovers is a supernatural secret that must never see the light of day, or better still, the light of the full moon. Ooh. So there's your whiskey and werewolves. This book, I gotta admit, based off of the description, I almost said subscription, based off of the description, I did not have high hopes. I thought that this was going to be fun, but I didn't think that I was going to like it. I mostly just got it Well, I got it for two reasons. One, it's published by Image Comics, and I wanted to expand my library a little bit, just past Marvel and DC. So I'm looking to buy more Image, IDW, Dark Horse, Caliber, some more lesser-known publishers. Lesser-known is kind of disrespectful, I guess, because Image, IDW, and Dark Horse are still pretty large, but still, they are not, you know, the big two. So I got it because it's published by Image, and I like Brian Azzarello, right? So I sort of knew that it would be well-written, but I really didn't think I would really enjoy the story all that much. And let me tell you, I was definitely wrong. I was definitely wrong. I liked this comic so much. I think I started it on, I guess I don't know what day it was, but 3 days later, I'd finished the whole volume, right? Which, I mean, granted, it's only six issues, so that's not that much. But considering the amount of time I spent watching my segment recommendation, it's still certainly something. I thought this was going to be a sort of, I thought it was going to be sort of hokey, I guess. It was going to be a bit more of like a, for some reason I thought it would be like a, I guess maybe a satire, but it is definitely not. It is a very, it leans very heavily into Azzarello's noir sort of style of writing. It's very, very, I guess, I don't know what word I'm looking to describe this here, but I gotta say the prose is phenomenal. The captions and the inner monologue of this main character, Lou Perlow, the city slick gangster, who's you know, well out of his element in Appalachia here. It's very fun. Hearing the way that he sort of describes the situation, I guess, and the way that he, you get an insight into his mental image is very interesting to me. It feels true to character, I guess, which is, I mean, it's not like, you know, I have any other reference for this character, but all of the dialogue choices, they all felt very natural. I guess Lou Perlow felt very human to me. Not in the sense that, like, you know, he's somebody who I would, you know, necessarily enjoy meeting, or somebody that you would even meet today. I mean, it's a, like I said, it's Prohibition era, right? So this is a, he talks like somebody from the 1920s, I guess. So, and take that as you will, in the way that he treats others around him, right? But he's a very intriguing character from, I guess not from right away. Yeah, because he doesn't get introduced immediately. But from, I would say, about eight pages in, I was hooked on Lou Perlow. This is somebody who I want to see where the story takes him in the further volumes, right? Because this is, like I said, this is only volume one. I believe there's six volumes, perhaps. Five or six, I believe. Or there's the complete collection, which collects all 28 issues, also available. But yeah, I think there's six. So this is one that I definitely plan on continuing as we move along. It is very, there are some pages where I've had to go over them multiple times because there are things that I've missed in Eduardo Risso's style. Things that I've missed maybe might not necessarily be the most accurate way to describe that, but there are certain pages and certain panels that I've had to pore over a couple times and be like, what is that? Like, what am I seeing here? Or from what angle is this panel supposed to be looking at this gentleman, right? Or looking at whatever's happening. But I gotta say, the art style is absolutely beautiful. I love the way that Risso does emotion on faces. I don't know. There's just something about it. It's not like it's particularly different, I suppose. I just feel like I get so much more of the emotion out of the faces, especially when something, let's say, spooky is happening. I will also note that this is a mature comic. It is on the back, I'm looking at the barcode, rated M for mature. Now, it's not necessarily incredibly explicit. I mean, there's much like gore and stuff, but there's not a lot of nudity. There is quite a bit of profanity. I think in the whole comic, there's only like one page where there is direct nudity. It's one scene, but there's a couple pages, but I mean, it's very minimal. The mature aspect mostly comes from the amount of gore, the subject matter. Let's be honest here, the entire comic, you know, the impetus for the whole book is moonshine, right? So it's an illicit substance. It's not one that I would necessarily recommend for a young child. I definitely recommend it. It's incredibly fun. It obviously subverted my expectations. And maybe if I'd, you know, read it, if I'd read the back a little bit more closely, maybe I wouldn't have thought that it was going to be a sort of hokey satire. But when you're dealing with prohibition and then there's a picture of a werewolf on the back, I feel like it's a little justified to think something a little hokey is going to happen. But this is one that I thoroughly enjoyed. I plan on absolutely getting the rest of the series. This is one that I think would be really fun to see adapted in like I don't know now that I say that. I don't know. I guess I'd have to see where the story continues. But I really liked the setting. I really liked the people. And it struck me as the kind of comic that I would like to see adapted. I don't know. It would probably lend itself better to just being a movie. No, I think I would want to see like a six episode series where you really like lean into the horror nature of this. You really lean into the suspense because that is one thing. I feel like if they changed the back description and didn't have the image of the werewolf on the back, this would be a bit more of like an actual mystery thriller. Because when you're reading the beginning, I mean, you sort of make the assumption that it's a werewolf or something, but I think you don't actually fully see it until well into the comic. I mean, I don't even think I'm trying to flick through a panel here. I don't think you get an image of it in the first issue at all, except for, you know, some shadows in the opening sequence there. I think if they hadn't, I mean, you could even still have the name be Moonshine, right? And sort of have people suspect that it's just about this sort of noir thriller, right? And then have the big reveal be that there are werewolves in the universe. And I think that would have been a little bit more compelling. I guess, I don't know. I mean, I don't know why I say that, because obviously it was compelling enough to me to read the entire paperback in, you know, a couple days here. But I just feel like you could have really built up that suspense and had it be really fun if you just teased it a little bit more instead of just outright saying, you know, keep it out of the light of the full moon and having a werewolf on the back. I think if you just change it a little bit and just cut off that light of the full moon and just have the synopsis read, Prohibition era thriller Moonshine tells the story of Lou Perlow, a city slick gangster sent from New York to Appalachia to track down a new supplier of illicit booze. But what Lou unwittingly uncovers is a supernatural secret that must never see the light of day. If you just leave it there, you still obviously get what the comic's about, right? You realize, you know, the setting, the time period, and you understand that there's something supernatural in nature going on. It's up to you to figure out or guess, you know, what the supernatural thing is. I think that could have been much more interesting. That would have made it much more... That would have made it a much better mystery. Whereas the way it is right now, it's a fun supernatural horror thriller, right? But I would have liked a little bit more mystery, considering on the back, you know, under under the genres here, it says horror, mystery, prohibition. I would have liked if there was a little bit more mystery going on. It feels like the amount of mystery is pretty much non-existent. I mean, it's a mystery in the sense that, you know, they don't tell you everything right away, but it's not a mystery in the sense that, like, it doesn't feel like anybody is necessarily attempting to uncover any secrets. And so that is one thing that I would have liked to see different. But ultimately, I think this is an incredibly fun comic. Like I said, completely blew my expectations away. I'm still astonished. I'm a little bit lost for words because it's just so much more entertaining than I was expecting. It's definitely pick it up. I mean, it's as far as comics go, as far as trade paperbacks go, it's relatively cheap. The first volume is only $10. $10 for six issues. Most of those, you know, I mean, it's not a huge difference, but most six-issue trade paperbacks are like $15. And then, you know, obviously the more issues you get, they get to go up there up to, I mean, I think probably the most expensive one I can remember is probably like $30. That isn't like a hardcover or a deluxe. I think my copy of The Watchmen was about $30, and it's quite a few issues. I mean, that's a hefty chunk of material there. So, that's definitely actually a really good buy if that really is $30. I'll have to check that later. But the $10 for Moonshine, I think, is definitely worth it. The volume one gets you the first six issues, or if you just think you're going to like it, you like what you're hearing, the complete edition, which collects the entire run, issues 1 through 28, that is available on Amazon or the Image Comics website for $69.99. So, I don't know, 70 issues for, or $70 for 30 issues, I don't know if that's commensurate. I'd have to take a look at some of my other complete collections. Actually, no, I don't know. That's probably fair, because I think I bought my Return of the Winter Soldier complete edition, I think is similarly priced. And I don't even think that has as many issues. I don't know. I'd have to do some research into that. But I would say, at the very least, getting the individual issue is certainly worth the money. One that I would like to see adapted to the silver screen. Now, speaking of screens, so let's get into my recommendation for something to watch. At the outset, we promised you Werewolves, Whiskey, and the War to Save Humanity. We talked about the werewolves, we talked about the whiskey, so that only leaves one thing, and that is the fate of humanity and how it hangs in the balance. So my recommendation for this show, or for this week, is going to be Attack on Titan, an anime series. Now, anime is not something that we typically talk about on this podcast, and the reason that we don't talk about it is why I wanted to recommend Attack on Titan today. You see, if you'd asked 2 years ago, I mean, I maybe not even 2 years ago. No, yeah, probably still 2 years ago. If you'd asked me 2 years ago, I would have never, ever considered watching an anime, right? I was avidly against the genre as a whole. I didn't like anything about it. I thought it was weird. I felt like the stories were so over the top, beyond the pale, that I could never get into it. I didn't necessarily like the animation style, and I did not like at all the fact that you would have to watch, you know, with Japanese subtitles on. So it was something that I was avidly against, and it was something that I was pretty vocally against. You know, I mean, it's not like I would go on, you know, unprompted rants or anything, but if anybody brought it up, I was definitely going to talk about how much I disliked anime. And that was the status quo for a long time, and I don't know if it would have changed, except one fateful job, if not for one job. When I was working at Scooters, I became friends with one of my coworkers, and she would not shut up about this show, just kept recommending it, couldn't stop saying good things about it. It was really irritating, and eventually I lost my willpower. I lost my principles. I gave in, and I finally decided that I would watch the show. And I gotta say, it is probably the greatest recommendation I've ever gotten, right? Not only because I think I love the show itself, but because of the way that it changed my entire view on the genre, right? Like I said, I was avidly opposed to anime. I would never even consider watching one. But now, after watching Attack on Titan, I've added a bunch to my list. I am very open to the genre. I haven't seen any of the long-running series yet, any other long-running series yet. The only other thing I've watched is actually a limited miniseries on Netflix, so I wouldn't call myself an anime fan. Anybody who calls themselves an anime fan would probably not accept me, because I know literally nothing and have only seen, you know, this one show, which is widely regarded as, like, the great, if not the greatest, one of the greatest animes. Is the plural animes? One of the greatest anime shows of all time. Let's see. However, in more specific context, the plural form can also be animes. In general, commonly used context, the plural form will also be anime. So this doesn't help me at all. Thanks, Google. Anyways, what was I saying? It's a great show. For those of you who are unfamiliar, who have not heard, I will read the description. After his hometown is destroyed and is traumatized, young Eren Jaeger vows to cleanse the earth of the giant humanoid titans that have brought humanity to the brink of extinction. So in this world, all of humanity lives behind a series of walls, and outside the walls are these giant humanoid titans and when they see a humanoid, they really mean humanoid. Like, they look exactly like humans. I mean, they, except for the part that they have no reproductive organs. But they're essentially these big old giants that have no level of sentience, I guess. And they are, you know, they feast on humans to survive. And so humanity locks itself behind these walls. And the impetus of the show is these titans come and break the walls, something that has never happened in the 100-year history. And so Eren Jaeger loses his home and ultimately decides to join the military and be a part of an arm of the military called the Scout Regiment. And, man, I don't even know how to describe this show even more without accidentally, like, spoiling stuff. So I'll just get right into the recommendation, guys. So like I said, this is one that I had never considered watching. I'd heard of it, but up until getting this recommendation from my friend, I had never considered watching it. It sounded too crazy, right? Humanity is stuck behind a series of walls and giant human-looking things come and eat them. It's very outlandish. It's wacky. It's wacky to say the least. And so I was very skeptical coming in. But just in that first episode alone, I was pulled in. It is one of the most epic stories ever. Like I said, I haven't finished. I'm two episodes away from the end in my recent rewatch. And I gotta say, guys, it is, watching it a second time has only made it better. There are so many twists and turns that when I was watching the first time, I did not expect at all. But after going through a second time, everything is right there. These stories are so well crafted. There's so much depth and character and humanity there. I love all of the characters, even the ones I hate. They just have so much emotion, so much feeling. It's insane. I again, I'm at a loss for words because this is legitimately probably one of the greatest stories ever put to television. And I don't even feel that crazy saying that. Like, the way that this world evolves and the way that these characters act, these twists and turns, it's so amazing. There's so much, well, depth, I guess I already said it. There's so much depth there. This is one that I have watched. I am excited to finish again. I cannot wait to come back a third time. So this second viewing is my first time really watching the fourth season. And the fourth season really expands the universe out a lot. I can't explain how without, you know, giving away some of the craziest, switch ups in the whole, I'm so sorry, guys. You just have to go watch this show. It's so insane. It's incredible. And I guess you do not have to watch it with the Japanese subtitles. They have what they call sub and dub. So sub is obviously with, it's Japanese audio, English subtitles, and dub is with English audio. I have not listened to the dub version, so I don't know how, like, the two compare. I mean, obviously it's the same story, but I don't know how the performances compare. The delivery by these Japanese voice actors is insane. Some of the greatest voice acting I've ever seen. There's so much emotion there. When the character, like, starts to cry, you feel it. It's insane. They deserve all the praise. So amazing. So, like I said, you don't necessarily have to watch. I know that hardcore anime fans will tell you that it's not the same and it's kind of fake to listen to dub, but I don't care. I'm much more interested in you experiencing the story, right? I don't care if you do it in Japanese or English. Maybe I would care if I listen to the dub version and it turns out that the voice acting is terrible, but like I said, I have no frame of reference. If you don't mind reading subtitles, I would definitely recommend watching it subbed. I think it's, like I said, these performances are amazing. And I feel like since you know it's adapted from a manga, right? So it's originally a Japanese tale. I feel like in the translation, and again, I'm not basing this off of the translation of this in particular. I'm more thinking of like other foreign language films or series when you try to do them dubbed. I feel like there's something lost in the translation. I feel like typically they lose the sense of gravitas, of emotion, of, I don't know. I guess maybe it's because it's, you know, it's typically it's not the same author, right? And so it's a translator who's trying to capture an author's voice as opposed to the author's voice just coming through. Maybe that's it. Like I said, I don't know if that necessarily applies here. I do know that on my third watch, I'm going to watch it dubbed for this reason so that I know if there's any, you know, if there's any reason necessarily to only recommend the sub version. But yeah, for now, if you're fine with subtitles, I would say definitely go sub, but it's not the end of the world if you want to go dub. I'm not gonna cry about it, but I think this is definitely one that is worth a watch. It is, I mean, the episodes are fairly short, but sometimes it does feel long. There's four seasons, I think a total of 60? No, I was way wrong. A total of 98 episodes. That's not true, because IMDb also includes like these little other episodes, which aren't part of the main show proper. I think they're little supplemental material. It's tied on IMDb. Each episode title there's an OVA at the beginning. So I don't know what this is from, but when I'm watching on Hulu, these episodes are not available. So I wonder, man, I'm going to have to see if I can find these somewhere to see if I'm missing stuff. Man, I wish I hadn't realized that those that those weren't there. Dang. But yeah, so I mean, there's four seasons, so there's 80 or so episodes. The first two seasons are fairly short, I believe. Let's see, the first season, oh no, not really at all. The first season has 25 episodes. The second season has 12. So that's what I was thinking. Man, I mean, so yeah, no, the second season, I don't think was nearly as good. No, man, now looking back through, I'm reminding myself now, looking back through these episode titles, no, all the seasons are great so far. Season four, I'm not sure on. I'll have to watch it the second time just because it's very weird. Like I said, it's a drastic change. It vastly expands the world in a way that I wasn't necessarily expecting, and because of that, I think it feels weird. There's a massive time jump as well, and so it feels kind of weird. Like, some of the characters, I'm like, man, what happened in this time frame that made you like this? But one of my big complaints, I think, has been answered as to why that is so. But yeah, I gotta say, guys, please watch this. From somebody who used to hate anime and somebody who was definitely opposed to it, I think this is absolutely worth the watch. I mean, like I said, this is, I think, one of the greatest stories ever put to television. At least the first three seasons. Obviously, I can't necessarily comment on the fourth one because I haven't finished it yet. I'm still two episodes from the end, but the first three seasons are crazy good. And so I guess I will leave it there. It's available, I suppose I should say, where you can watch it. All four seasons are on Hulu. This is weird. On IMDb, it says seasons 1 through 12 are available on Max with a subscription, but it's not 12 seasons, and I'm pretty sure it's not on Max, so this is really weird, but take that as you will, I guess. I don't know. It's definitely not on Max. I don't know why that's showing up there. But yeah, all four seasons are available on Hulu. Definitely worth a watch. Like I said, I mean, even they're short episodes. Each one's only 23 minutes. So even if you just start with the first two episodes, That's all I'm really asking. I'm sure that you will be interested and want to see how the story continues. I mean, to put this in perspective, so you guys know that it's not just me being crazy. I'm looking at the first season right now, like the individual episodes. There's not a single episode that is ranked under an 8. The vast majority are above an 8.5, and a good handful are above 9, right? So this is a high-rated show. And the same goes for season 2. I mean, they're all above 8. I think every single episode of this show might be above 8 stars, which is not, you know, common. I mean, okay, so let me just describe to you this show just in rankings. So I'm looking at season 3. Episode 1, 8.8, 2, 9.2, 3, 8.7, 3, 8.5, 4, episode 4, 8.5 stars, 5, 9, 6, 9.2, 7, 9.5. Like, man, they're almost, I'd have to actually look at this, but are those the only 8-star ranked episodes in this season? Hang on, so there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Of a 22 episode season, only 5 are ranked below a 9. Can you believe that? That's insane. I didn't realize that. But, I mean, like I said, I guess I should have guessed it because this is widely regarded as the greatest anime, like, of all time. I mean, there are probably people who would say, like, One Piece is better. I know there are definitely people who would say that they like Death Note more. Yeah, I don't know. I'd have to watch, you know, some more of these anime before I can animes, I guess. Anime. What do you guys think sounds right? Cuz it looks like the kind of like it feels like the kind of word where there shouldn't be an S at the end, but sometimes it feels right. So I don't know. I guess we're back talking about grammar again. Why do we do this every episode? But now I'm jibber-jabbering. So, yes, please, I would recommend watching Attack on Titan. I think it's well worth it. And with that, we're going to leave it here. Like I said at the beginning, keep your eyes glued to our social media for the announcement of our first live stream. On any of the social media platforms, that is at New Wave Nerds. We mostly use X these days. We still use Twitter. We still use Instagram, but not nearly as much. X is just an easier platform for long form like conversation and sharing in a more permanent manner. So yeah, please go subscribe there, and we will catch you guys next time.